All right. In Parshas Emor, every year we read about Sfiras HaOmer because that's where it appears. All the Parsha of the Moadim appears in Parshas Emor, and it always happens to be a great Parsha coincidence because it always happens to fall out during the period of Sfiras HaOmer. So the pasuk in this week's Parsha tells us, "Usfartem lachem mi machras haShabbos," that you have to count starting from the second day of Pesach. Usfartem lachem. So the kasha is asked, what would have been lost had the Torah just said, "Usfartem mi machras haShabbos"? Why is Usfartem lachem? So there's another pasuk in this week's parsha, "Lekachtem lachem," when it comes to Dalet Minim, and we know what lachem means over there. That since Lekachtem lachem be Yom Rishon Pri Etzadar Kabbos Tzimarim Arvinachal, right, enough Etzavos, you have to take the Dalet Minim Mishalachem. It's got to belong to you. That's why we have all those fascinating discussions of if you want to give your Dalet Minim to your child and it's the first day and he could be Kona but he can't be Makna. All those fancy discussions are only because of the word Lachem, that it's got to belong to you. But that doesn't work for Sfiras HaOmer. By Sfiras HaOmer, what do you mean Lachem? It has to belong. There's nothing to belong to me. There's no Chefta Shel Mitzvah. It's just a Sfira. It's just a reciting account. So what do we learn from Lachem? So Chazal actually have a Joshua from Lachem. But Pshuto Shel Mikra, what do we learn from Lachem? Furthermore, a little bit later on, the Torah teaches us the episode of the Mekalel we have in this week's Parsha. So two interesting things about the yichus of the Mekalel, both relating to his yichus. One is that it says that he came mitoch b'nei Yisrael. Zakt Rashi, what does it mean he came mitoch b'nei Yisrael? Melamed shenizgayer. So we know he came mitoch b'nei Yisrael because he was megayer. But he's also described as a ben ish mitzri. And Rashi says, ben ish mitzri? What kind of yichus is that? So Rashi says, no, not just any ben ish mitzri, the ish mitzri. Which ish mitzri? The one that when Moshe Rabbeinu walked out of the palace and he saw an ish mitzri, makhe ish ivri, meyachav, and he decided, even kol v'chov, yarki nesh, v'yachas a mitzri, that ish mitzri! This is the child of that very ish mitzri, says Rashi. So here's the thing. The only thing we know about the Mekalel is that he is the son of that ish mitzri and that he was megayer. Right? We know one other thing we'll get to in a second. Right? He's the son of that ish mitzri and he was megayer. If you look back in Rashi on Moshe Rabbeinu going out and seeing the ish mitzvi, vayifen ko v'cho vayarki ein ish. Zakt Rashi, what's vayarki ein ish? That he saw that none of his descendants are ever going to be megayer. That none of his descendants are going to be megayer. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu felt comfortable killing him, because nothing good was ever going to come out of him. Had something good been destined to come out of him, he never would have killed him. But the one thing we know about that ish mitzvi up until this point, was that none of his descendants were going to be Megayer. Now, the second thing in the entirety of Torah that we learn about this ish mitzri is that the only child we know of was Megayer. Hello, Davar, who, no? It's like the one thing we know about this guy is that he's a ger, and the one thing we know about the ish mitzri, about his father, is that he's supposed to have no children that are Megayer. So asks the Taz in Divrei David on the Torah. Right? That's the Taz's kasha. We then have one more identifying feature of the Mekalel. Torah says his mother was Shlomo's Bas Divri L'matei Dun. Dasakenim Bal Yatoso says L'matei Dun, that's what causes him the Meriva, that's what causes all the fighting, because the Gemara, the first paragraph of Pesachim says that if someone comes from Dun, if someone is always asking to go to Dinei Torah, he seems overly litigious, then he's from Matei Dun. He likes a good fight, right? That's the other thing we know about this guy, that he always is looking to pick a good fight. So, what exactly why do we blame Dun for this? You know, what exactly are we to make of this Mekalel? So, Dasikin Baliatosis has a beautiful idea about another section of the Parsha. Torah tells us in last week's Parsha that you're not allowed to get tattoos, you're not allowed to mark your bodies with cuts, or you're not allowed to cut off your payas, things like that. In this week's Parsha, the mitzvah of not getting tattoos, not having all these things, and not making cuts in your skin, all that, is an Isser again, but this time just for Kohanim. Right? We have a separate Isser to do these things for Kohanim, specifically. So Maral Diskin explains that the reason the priests in other religions used to mark their bodies, meaning if you look in Sefer HaChinuch, why these things are Isser, it's because it's the dark day of the Avodah Zarah, and the priests of Avodah Zarah used to get tattoos and things like that to mark themselves. Why would they mark themselves? Says the Maral Diskin, the reason they would mark themselves is because they used to have public bathhouses. And a priest, when he's wearing his priestly garb, is recognizable as a priest. His kedusha, so to speak, is recognizable.
but he's going to go to the bathhouse with everybody else, and he's going to look just like everybody else. He's going to look like a schlepper just like everybody else. So you'd have to have something that stays on his body, that marks him, so that everyone will know that he's still a priest, that there's some physical representation. And that's why the Maral Diskin says that we are told that's not where your Kedusha is going to come from. It's not going to come from externalities. It's not going to come from being recognizable in something physical. It's going to be the true Kedusha of being a Mamlechus Kohanim V'Goy Kadosh, and even more so, being the actual Kohanim, is going to be something inherent. It's going to be the way you behave. It's going to be the way you act. It's going to be the way you believe. It's not going to be physical things that mark your body. We have many, many examples in Jewish history of great, great Gedolei Yisrael that looked like very, very regular people. You ever see a picture of the Rugachever? He looks like, a wagon driver. That's what he looks like. I mean, you picture a wagon driver in the stories of Hasidic Rebbes and wagon drivers. He looks like the wagon driver in the story, not the Rebbe in the story. Many, many great Gedolim. My brother is quoted in the Rav Natan Greenblatt biography, telling the following story. Rav Natan Greenblatt was a very unassuming. He fits this description, right? He was someone who would wear like light-colored suits, a little gray hat with a feather in it, his little goatee. Did not look like the greatest expert in Evna Ezer on the planet, right? Which he was. So one time, Rav Asher Weiss was in America, and my brother said, "Oh, Rebbe, Rav Asher, I want to introduce you. This is Rav Natan Greenblatt from Memphis." So Rav Asher had never heard of him, didn't know him, and he took one look at him. He says, "Hashem shabench you with nachas and gezuntah." Like, he gave him a bracha and he moved on. He just assumed that, you know, this guy 20 years older than a Rav Asher, more than 20 years older than a Rav Asher, he just wanted a bracha, whatever, because you would never assume anything about him. You know, you would never. But that because our kedoshim don't necessarily always, as I say, Chaim Zimmerman was a Rosh Shiva in Skokie. He was fired eventually. But and he moved to Eretz Yisrael. He was a big, big Talmud Chacham also, very outside-the-box kind of fellow. The Maaseh they tell of Chaim Zimmerman is he got into a huge fight with the Hanhala of the Yeshiva. And he got up at a dinner and he said, someone came in Shemayim, the moon came and said, "I don't have any power," or whatever. Hashem said, "Don't worry, the Bnei Yisrael are going to bless you, you know, every month." And the little worm came and said, "What am I? I'm just..." Hashem said, "No, they're going to cut the Avnei Eifod with you. You're going to be special." And the mamzer came to the Ribbono Shel Olam and said, "What's going to be with me? I'm a mamzer. I'm the worst." And Hashem said, "Don't worry, you're going to be the president of the Skokie Yeshiva." So that's... I think that's when he got fired. But when he went to Eretz Yisrael, Rav Aaron Silver, my rabbi from Karen Vyavna, told us that when he went to Eretz Yisrael, he was still wearing his plaid short jackets, and he's just going nuts. He knows everything. And they said to him, "You know, why don't you wear long? You know, you're in Eretz Yisrael, you should wear long." He said, "Because the Gemara says that a Talmud Chacham shouldn't dress like every Amaretz, and I see every Amaretz in Eretz Yisrael. Seems to dress in long." Okay, so the definition of real mamlechus kohanim v'goy kadosh, our kedusha is expressed simply. And part of the avoda of a Jew is to find our kedusha, to develop our kedusha, and also to be able to recognize that kedusha in other people, even when it's less obvious. That's part of what we're supposed to do. And that's, you know, for those of you who are going to go into chinuch, it's such a nekuda of success in chinuch. It's just to actually genuinely like and believe in your talmidim. That they can become great, they will be great, and guess what? Sometimes in high school, that's not so externally evident, but it's true. You know, Rabbi David Friedman from DRS used to always say, "I'm nice to all the Talmidim because they're going to be on the board one day." You know, at some point, you know, they're going to succeed and they're going to do great things. And if the more you believe that, the more you can appreciate the potential and the kedusha that's there, the more they'll be able to step up to the plate. I remember many years ago in a DRS Rebbe's meeting, Rabbi Moshe Benovitz was a Rebbe in DRS at the time, an amazing Rebbe in DRS, and he was frustrated about a certain Talmud that didn't believe in himself. And he said, no matter how low we set the bar, he finds a way to crawl under it. Right? I mean, he'll always win the game of limbo, right? He'll always crawl under it because he just doesn't believe he can ever succeed. He can never go over that bar. They tell the maisa of a teacher who was having a hard time with her class, and she came into the principal's office to tell him that she's just struggling too much. By the way, if you're going into chinuch, every teacher has this in the first couple of years, where you just feel like, this isn't for me, they are murdering me. I thought I was going to walk into the classroom, and I was going to be the cool young Rebbe, and everyone's going to love me, and it's going to be good. And it just doesn't always, it never works that way. Meaning, it's an avoda, it's a malacha, it's an expertise. Teaching is an expertise like anything else, where you need experience and training and developing and growing, and that's just the way it works. And you take your lumps along the way. Believe me, I took my lumps along the way. And you still learn throughout your life. You always try to get better and try to learn. But this woman came into the principal's office ready to quit, as every first-year teacher at some point is ready to do. And before the conversation started, the principal said, I'm sorry, I just need to go out for a second. I need to deal with something. I'll be right back. Principal leaves the office. The teacher's looking on the principal's desk and sees the teacher's own class list, because principal's obviously doing the homework to see, before having this meeting, to see who the teacher is dealing with. And she notices numbers, three-digit numbers, next to each student's names, and she realizes, oh my God, those are the kids' IQ scores, and that kid's a 140, and that kid's a 145, and she's like, I'm dealing with a class of gifted students who nebuch are acting this way because of whatever circumstances life has given them, but these are gifted students, and the principal comes back into the office, and the teacher, and she says, well, what did you want to talk to me about? Teacher says, nothing, it was, I'm fine, I worked it out, and went back into that classroom with a new sense of purpose, because now she's going to uplift these gifted students and allow them to meet their potential, and it worked, and they started meeting their potential, and they started succeeding, and at the end of the year, the principal said, you know, you did a really great job, and the teacher said, you gave me the most gifted class. Of course I did a really good job with the most gifted class. And the principal said, what are you talking about? I gave you, what Rabbi Kamenetsky used to call in DRS, the Leibedick class. That's what he used to call the clinically insane. I gave you the Leibedick class. And the teacher said, now I saw the list on your desk with the numbers, with the IQ numbers, so I realized that they're gifted. And the principal says, those are locker numbers. Those are teacher wasn't so gifted. but when you recognize that kedusha, when you believe in other people, they tend to step up to that. So the Taz asks, how it could be that Moshe Rabbeinu noticed about this Ish Mitzri, that nobody would ever descend from him, would be Megayer, considering that the guy's own son was Megayer. So the Taz says, Hacha Amar Shemei Hayom V'Hala Lo Yatzim Mimenu, Aval Zek Var Yatzim Mimenu. It just says, from that day on, no future descendant is going to be Megayer. Whatever descendant he already has, that wasn't at risk over here. He can kill this guy, the descendant will still be alive. And therefore, he was able to kill the guy, even though one of his existing descendants would be Megayer. Okay, a very technical answer. Says Rav Henoch Leibowitz, Rav Henoch has such a way about like just finding the most pashla ha'aras, and finding Moshe in the most pashla ha'ara. He says, think about that answer of the Taz. He's saying that, oh, you know why Moshe Rabbeinu was able to kill him? That even though, and was able to be confident that nothing good would come out of him? Because the good thing already came out of him. The one who was Megayer was already born. Who was that guy? It was the Mekalel. It's one of the villains in Jewish history. And Moshe Rabbeinu would not have killed the Mitzri had he known that the Mekalel would come out of that guy. It's only because the Mekalel had already emerged that he was safe to kill this Mitzri. But if it were only something in the future, it's not worth robbing the world of this Mekalel. So says Rav Henoch, what that tells you is the value of and the Kedusha of each and every Jew, even somebody like the Mekalel. It would have been worthwhile to save the Mitzri, who was otherwise deserving of death. He was Makei Shivri, just so they could have the Mekalel descend from him. That's the Kedusha of a Jew. When a person is overly litigious, it means he's looking for problems in everything. It means everything's got to be a federal case. Anything that doesn't go his way, it's because someone wronged him, it's because someone, everything's got to be dealt with in a Beis Din. Normally going to a Beis Din is a good thing when you have something that you can't otherwise resolve, but you're supposed to otherwise resolve most things in your life. Right, so you go to a Beis Din, it's a last resort, because you can't resolve everything, and it's important to go to a Beis Din.
But if he's always running to Beis Din, it means he's seeing everything in the negative. He's seeing the problems with everything and everybody. You look at the period of Sfira Sa'omer, the Bali Musar pick up on how all the Rishonim, based on Chazal, speak about this period of time as a time of growth and a time of development. So when we count Sfira, Usfartim Lachem, so the Bali Drush point out, where do we ever have Lecha or Lechem meaning something not only by Talad Minim, but Avraham Avinu is told Lech Lecha, and what does Rashi say? Lecha Letovascha Ulahana'ascha, that it's for your benefit, it's for your good. Ksav Sofer says, that's Usfartim Lachem, is Letovaschem Ulahana'ascham. That Usfartim Lachem, in the context of Sfira, emphasizes the notion that it's to our benefit, that we have the opportunity to refine ourselves, to elevate ourselves, to find the Kedusha in ourselves, and to build that Kedusha, to build that confidence that we can be something, that we can develop into major contributing factors in Klal Yisrael. And hopefully when we get there, part of that is to recognize Kedusha and other people around us as well. And particularly, if I could just add, you know, at a time when the world is losing a lot of Kedusha, in both of these regards, both inherent Kedusha, people that you would recognize as Kedoshim, Rachman al-Tzanar being killed just yesterday, this horrible, horrible accident in the IDF, and you look at these soldiers, and obviously every soldier is heartbreaking, whether they're from or not from, or this or that, but all these guys were from, all these guys were B'nai Yeshiva, and the loss of that Kedusha that needs to be replaced in this world right now, or being the type of Kedusha, just the ability to recognize Kedusha. Look at how many people can't recognize an Am Kadosh. How many people can't recognize an Eretz that's Kadosh? They can't recognize Kedusha when they see it, so it's up to us to use the period of Sfiras Omer to recognize Kedusha in ourselves, in others, and to develop that Kedusha.